This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Robert Stark here. I'm joined here with Francis Nally. We're going to be discussing his new lexicon and also the theme of fast food nationalism. Francis, great talking to you.
It's nice to talk to you again, Robert. It's been some time, just a little bit busy on my side.
I feel a little bit insulted that you didn't add me to your lexicon. You're not giving me my narcissistic supply.
Well, guess what? The other day, I showed this same article to Rachel Haywire, and Haywire says, "I'm not on the list." And then she went in this little spiral about how we should keep our scenes separate, but we should both respect each other. And I was like, yo, chill. I'll add you to the list. I mean, so Robert, I'll add you to the list eventually because this is V1 of the list, because there's so many topics, things, and objects and whatever that make up of the official, as I call it, the post-neo-folk or unpop lexicon. And I guess this goes on with officially my article about fast food fascism and its esoteric meaning, which I wrote about 2 weeks ago. And was kind of a response to a Countercurrents article by Spencer J. Quinn, who's been writing for the website for some time. And he basically wrote that the film The Incredibles 2 was the perfect gem of a film which transcends the artifice of merely excellent filmmaking and enters the realm of timeless art. And that supposedly it's a victory for the right. And it comes to the conclusion that the Countercurrents white survival motif is indeed losing its fashion. It's becoming a fad. And in other words, it's like a far-right Slavoj Žižek criticism as a means to proselytize normies so they can fight for, you know, white survival or something like that. And white survival is an interest in the whole ethno-nationalist sphere.
Yeah, but I mean, how does it interest you when you want the Kalergi plan? You want to abolish the white race and have everyone be Eurasian?
I didn't say that. I'm not a supremacist. I'm not a supremacist, and nor do I advocate the Kalergi plan. I don't know, Robert. I don't think you've read my previous articles, you know.
I'm just screwing with you.
I know about the amnesty argument. And others I've quite stated over and over again. Now, I realize that a lot of people in the pre-white nationalist 1.0 were indeed white power skinheads, and they came from the punk rock movement, or they were like bikers like Tom Metzger, or crazy people like James Mason, you know, part of the, you know, Charles Manson cult. There was this kind of, again, you were a part of Voice of Reason. There was Carolyn Yeager, the Holocaust nut, saying Julius Evola is some decadent guy, and some old Paul Fromm, who I don't know what, loses his marbles. It must be him being Canadian. But you add this all up, and now we got Matthew Heimbach. There still is that big tradition of the far right being loony and kooky. And it's just a recent thing where Greg Johnson and, you know, of Countercurrents and Jared Taylor of American Renaissance have softened things up to be, well, that was the past. Let's move on now. It should be about metapolitics, about white survival, and that's that, you know. And yet, it's still a hard game, and there's still people who are attracted to the far right because it relates to their queer personality. And when I say queer, I don't mean gay or sexual deviancy, but I mean cultural deviancy. You're odd. You're strange. That man's a queer because he likes 1488 stuff, and I've knew too many people in the scene which are like this. So how can you be this futuristic trad person and fight for this? Where it makes sense, where the Unite the Right, which I attended, was a LARPing fest of this.
Yeah, exactly. So with your theme of fast food fascism or fast food nationalism, a lot of it's borrowed from the show. We do that show with Sean Partridge, and he does this pop art, the Partridge Family, the pop art of corporate logos. Is this embracing fast food culture, or is it more a sort of anti-consumerist critique?
Well, or I think something else. I think it's a lot of those things together, but it isn't that typical liberal who's ironic or satirical, quote unquote. You know. It really is a sincere love for these things. When you start to realize that, again, the white nationalist movement was motivated by the genre of neo-folk, of Dead Can Dance and Death in June and Current 93. And
so neo-folk, it does have some overlap with the far right, but it's also associated with apocalypse culture.
Correct. And there were a lot of people... Well, there was an association between esoteric, you know, goth culture with the obsessive occultism mixed with the esoteric nature of the Black Sun or the German Skull and Crossbones. And, you know, and you add, you know, Douglas Pierce of Death in June, who's, you know, into homo nationalism, flying a rainbow flag with the Black Sun, you get really confused and you start to see this overlap. And a lot of people who sincerely believed in Death in June and Dead Can Dance made countercurrents possible. And so now you're lost in this LARPy reality where there was an actual divide with Sean Partridge's projects. And he has the Partridge Family Temple or the Church of Anne Frank. But there was this attempt to collect this thing as, you could say, a pre-Starkian movement, to use the term Robert Stark. And that was the Unpop movement, which you could see at www.unpopart.org. And the whole purpose...
So yeah, it kind of reminds me of the whole vaporwave genre. So what vaporwave did is it used all these corporate logos and corporate advertisements from the 80s and 90s. And originally it started out as a kind of critique of consumerism, but then the end result was creating this really beautiful aesthetic, almost to the point that's this utopian aesthetic, to the point where a lot of people want to live in some vaporwave society, like a vapor island in a sense.
Well, I wrote an article about the genre of vaporwave, and it's motivated by a Jewish person, 10 Tricks Point Never, whose ideal of consumerism leads to deluge, and kind of in the way of capitalism, and it's bad. You know, he's kind of this ideal of being, again, ironic and satirical and embracing it. However, vaporwave, it is popular among young people. But again, it's very Asian-Aryan in detail. It turns out that the genre is filled with basement nerds and video gamers and Asian culture lovers and just this nerd mentality. And SJWs now love it and normies. And so vaporwave, yeah, you can slow down.
Yeah, I think everyone likes it. People on the alt-right, normies, SJWs, because, I mean, a great aesthetic can bring about different political groups. And I was discussing in this... on the recent show I did with Matthew Pegas about neo-nationalism, kind of basing nationalism and politics on aesthetics. And I'm really fascinated by that idea, just creating like a utopian society, and that will attract the kind of people you want to live in your society. But one thing I've kind of thought about is there's plenty of people who share similar aesthetic visions, but a lot of their political views could be at odds. But so that's definitely an issue. But I do think that any political movement is basically irrelevant if it doesn't have an aesthetic utopian vision.
But the problem ultimately of vaporwave is that it doesn't envision something of transgressive art. It's anti-transgressive art, and it kind of goes along with a lot of continental philosophy that you might see published on far-left outlets as Verso Books, or the kind of post-New Left in a way. And so Vaporwave is pretentious in nature and kind of a fad of the teens era. And that's why it's very important to bring up unpop art movement. And that was an ideal between Boyd Rice, Brian M. Clarke, and Sean Partridge. And the ideal is they grew up in a time of the 1960s and 70s where it was full of hippies and toys and cartoons, and it was boys were boys and girls were girls, and kind of, again, white people, but it was still decadent art. And that boomer generation, yes, they're in positions of power, but a lot of youth culture, especially the hippies or proto-hipsters, came from the 60s. It was the origin of all transgressive art, of all youth culture. And again, this is this old school fascination of the alt-right. Even go back to, you know, T-Rex, where the guitarist, I think, was wearing an iron cross. You know, what's that supposed to be? Like a Nietzschean ideal of being, you know, some kind of strong man or a
militant.
Yeah,
all those kind of apocalypse figures, culture, apocalypse cultural figures like Boyd Rice and the Partridge family, they really came out of the kind of 90s counterculture. So they were looking back to the, say, the 60s and 70s, and they weren't embracing the whole kind of a hippie culture. Obviously, I mean, if you listen to Boyd Rice's album, Hatesville, it's like the total antithesis of the hippie culture, but they're kind of borrowing on a lot of the aesthetics, and that's kind of what's happened today with there was the vaporwave scene, which got started in the teens of this century, and then fash wave, and which became popular with the alt right. And the thing about a lot of that stuff about the 80s is there's one aspect of 80s culture that's very kind of a consumeristic and kind of this hyper-capitalism and Ronald Reagan. But there's another side of 80s retrofuturism that, on one hand, it's very futuristic, and then on the other hand, it's also Eurocentric, whether it's the architectural 80s retrofuturistic aesthetic or the British New Wave music.
Well, the problem with Fashwave, as I said before in an article about Vaporwave I wrote, is that Fashwave is just a Trojan horse for people who already like Retrowave to go on the right alt-right, and it's not a legitimate genre. And most music critics on the normie sphere would say that itself. And again, as I said before, Cybernazi and Zerius are a part of Identity Europa or some far-right interests. They're just using the music as a means of proselytization. They're not genuine, sincere musicians who want to discover new sounds. They just want a target audience, a consumer, and an exploiter. And again, a lot of this art from the unpop stuff comes from Sean Partridge. The ideal of being a beatnik. It was a proto-hippie thing that, you know, you didn't like the squares, man, which is now we use the word normies. We didn't, you know, the whole ideal of sitting to jazz and liking black people. I was just thinking that, you know, the whole Stooges guy, the Stooges wore the Iron Cross, but T-Rex, he died at 29, but he was into black chicks. Jim Goad says he's a big oil driller. There seems to be a fascination with, like, black girls and wild culture. And then it kind of moved on with John Lennon and the Asian woman, you know, Yoko Ono. And there was this kind of the start of postmodern culture. And a lot of that as well has to do with the collapse of the record company, creating free entrepreneurship, the start of Ronald Reagan, and corporations coming up. And then we start to realize that a main aspect of fast food fascism, you know, it has an esoteric meaning that McDonald's is the welfare state, that if you can't afford food, you go to McDonald's. And McDonald's has such a high power in our culture, we think American food is McDonald's. We think it's a cheeseburger. Well, fast forward a bit. I wrote another article before I wrote the Fashwave sect article when I went to see Blank Banshee. And Blank Banshee is probably the most cutting-edge vaporwave act yet. He wears a mask and a disco camouflage, kind of like Douglas Pierce of Death in June, and he makes vaporwave trap beats, and he's kind of joking about this Asian Nintendo-controlled video gamer land of future Eurasian society. Not specifically Eurasian, but you kind of get the point with Blank Banshee's art. And I started to make the thesis in that article was that there's going to be something beyond the alt-right. It's going to be alt, you know, vapor or something like that. And what's really going to happen is that we're going to eventually embrace being a consumer and the merchant. And we have to understand that the alt-right is imploded, dead, is because not only is it there's no outlets anymore, but because all the outlets are monopolized by merchants like Richard Spencer, Greg Johnson, and Jared Taylor that need a consumer class to consent and believe in their desires of 1488 LARPing. And this doesn't get anything done. It just makes Jared Taylor, Richard Spencer's, and Greg Johnson's life more lucrative because they're willing to throw money at these people. And because of this reality, it sounds a lot like postmodern continental critique of capitalist philosophy. But it ends up being that the new fascism is a worship of the mundane, crass commercialism.
So what you're trying to get at is you want, I mean, I know this sounds really cliche, but you want to create something that's like a new and avant-garde that hasn't been done before. And so many of these people are regurgitating these different ideas. Is that basically what you're getting at to sum it up?
Well, yes, it's going to be a new avant-garde movement. But you have to understand where transgressive art is going. And Antifa is not the transgressive art because they're too busy being old-time people, going after people who they think is racist. And there's another party called Kekistani who's just trolls on a board who do it IRL. Now there's the alt knights and the Proud Boys, and it seems like we have an Evolian culture war. But what can shock both parties, left-wing, right-wing, is the concept or consenting ideal that we are consenting consumers at the will of larger corporations that literally cuck us and, like, we bow down to them as gods. You know, for example, the CBSI used by the Partridge Family Temple is an eye of a cosmic god that looks over us. CBS watches us and cares about us. It's a cosmic being that's not just a mundane corporation. It's the Illuminati. Same could be said about the NBC Peacock. It has the seven colors, the rainbow. It's when color TV debuted in 1965, before the revolution. Colors represent, you know, gay pride or ethno-nationalism. There's a lot of esoteric meanings you can get out of then this, like, fast food products that we see every day of our lives. I mean, Ralph Nader once said that you have to be asleep in order to avoid any commercial impact of our lives because of how big the free entrepreneur capitalist system is. And so if there's anything that's influencing every one of us, left wing, right wing, centrist, or just normie who just wants to be left alone, it's you're a consumer. And you might as well bow down to the gods that are corporations and consider them as sincere and real gods.
So are you saying to embrace consumerism rather than rebelling against it? Because that sounds somewhat contradictory to what you were talking about creating like this a new avant-garde culture which is outside of the mainstream kind of liberal consumerist culture, but it's also anti-reactionary.
We had David Thrussell or Snog on the show,
right?
And a lot of David Thrussell's art or Snog's art
One of his album was the with the McDonald's men, the praying like the nationalism, but it's McDonald's, or it's like a form of Hinduism and serving McDonald's. I think Snog is a master.
Yeah, absolutely, but he's someone who's from the kind of dissident left, but he's obviously he's open-minded because he's good friends with Richard Wollstonecraft, and he's more coming from that kind of anti-consumerist angle. With the Partridge Family, like they have this whole kind of cult around these corporate logos. But with Snog, David Thrussell, it's pretty clear and obvious that he's using his work to mock this kind of massive consumerism.
Right. I mean, first there's consumer habit. And consumer habit is, if you're a musician and all you do is you have a music program like Propellerhead Reason and you have to buy rack extension or VSTs of materialistic possessions so you can become a quote-unquote better musician, you spend up $1,000, or the ideal, you're a so-called intellect, and then you buy books of David Foster Wallace and the quote-unquote the classics, because you need it. The same thing can be deduced to a goth who goes to Hot Topic and buys all the goth material, just so you can live that consumerist life. The same with gamers. They need board games all the time, and it just, people become these hoarders, and that is the bad habit of consumerism. However, when a lot of our art and a lot of our interest is transaction of giving money to artists that we like and balancing it too, and you have to get an income from somewhere, and you end up getting an income from working at Home Depot or flipping patties at McDonald's or working for Scott's Paper Towels and somewhere in middle of nowhere lands, and these normies who are dependent and want to shut up, what do they do with their money? Then pay for rent for someone else and their family. They go buy these things. Like I just said, they develop a habit of toy trains or consumerism that creates this. There's no freedom. There's no sense of adventure. Everything is a Marxist materialistic gain. We've lost this sense of, and so I guess that is the criticism against the normie, how consumer minded it is. But what I'm saying is, in the same way that the Partridge Family uses the CBSI as some Illuminati god, is that like Def and June that use the Black Sun to promote homo nationalism, we can use the Golden Arches or Chuck E. Cheese or Roy Rogers and say it's a ground of Hinduism or some vert, or say the Banana Splits or H.R. Puffin stuff were actually the creation of drug culture. Does it really offend, or it offends normie right-wing and left-wing people, is because they think, no, that's just a crass cartoon. That's just a crass, those are the enemies. Why are you worshiping them? Because the reason why is because this is the truth. This is the ideal that materialism is our God, just like how David Thrussell and Snog is playing with this corporate imagery through flags and to things and about.
It's okay, so Francis, I get what you're saying, but what do you want to achieve? Like, what kind of culture do you want to create? Can you get to that?
Well, Chris Korda had the Church of Euthanasia, and the point of the Church of Euthanasia was to hate on the 80s phenomenon of baby culture, to basically hate the normie, to hate the Chad and the Stacy, and to promote queer culture. And this is what it's really about. It's about queer culture. As I've said in the lexicon and in the ending of concluding my Fast Food Fascist article, I said Spencer J. Quinn ultimately is a square. He's not up with the
Spencer
trend.
J. Quinn is the counter-currents writer.
Yes, he's a square because he's using Zizekian far-right language and sincerely believes that The Incredibles 2 is somehow going to be a part of white survival. When, as a fast food fascist myself, or someone in the Partridge Family temple, or a post-neo-folk artist would say, is The Incredibles 2 is our doom. It's basically the ideal of an artificial white family It's crass commercialism. Nothing. It's an intelligent person is not making this anymore. Not a Yukio Mishima. Not some Patrick Tillman in the military. It's an all-down brown people end-all Disney thing. And to say it's white nationalism, I declare white nationalism or the North American New Right dead, is because it's just a tool to proselytize people for white survival. I propose a science fiction narrative that after this this white survival talk, and do we get to human biodiversity and ethno-nationalism with the free market, what's end up going to be transgressive art is not only that it will be political, say left-wing, right-wing, or it's going to hurt society as a whole. And if we hate consumerisms, and if we hate the normie, then we should pretend to be a Hare Krishna, a hippie of some sort, that's like a crass normie of some type. I also cite in the lexicon Peter Popoff and Reverend Leroy Jenkin. They're kind of these weird Pentecostal people who swindle non-whites and gullible whites of their money by using mythical magic. And he looks like some weird, goofy Pulp Fiction character with the plastic skin all over him. And so I think that is basically the alt-right in a nutshell, this kind of goofy Pentecostal guy. And that's what performance art or the post-neo-folk movement is going. And this is what it's really all about, the continuation of the unpop art movement in Starkian terms, like the whole Robert Stark sphere, mixed with kind of what I call, again, post-neo-folk. As I have the two definitions starting up the lexicon, neo-folk is a genre that says the folk and the obsession with European culture, and post-neo-folk, like postmodernism, criticizes the neo-folk aspect and believes that neo-folk can range from anything to crass McDonald's consumerism to Hanna-Barbera cartoons. And you could say Huckleberry Hound is the reincarnation of Vishnu. They both have blue skin.
I want to comment on something you said earlier, and this ties in with the whole theme of kind of neo-nationalism and creating a unique aesthetic vision. So Fashion Wave is something that it's obviously aesthetically pleasing and produces some great music. But yeah, you're totally right that it's basically continuing the new retrowave aesthetic. But we have a lot of these individuals in our scene. So Brandon Adamson has his unique aesthetic, which I'd say it's a unique aesthetic to his own, but it's definitely influenced by the 60s mod aesthetic, but also 70s and 80s retrofuturism and pop culture. And then, I mean, I have my artwork and my literature, which is very aesthetically driven, and I do these collages on my site. So, I mean, there is this kind of very distinct Starkian aesthetic, which borrows from different things. So I might borrow from, say, 80s retrofuturism or Art Deco, Deco Punk. Maybe throw in some imagery of some wilderness or some, maybe even some newer futuristic stuff or some European aesthetic. But combine it all together, there is this unique Starkian aesthetic, which is coherent. So what I'm doing is I'm not just like regurgitating other people's work. I want to create this unique aesthetic. And that's what a true artist does.
It's hard to imagine that the swastika was used by national socialists, a type of socialist that was far right-leaning and had racial consciousness, that they used a Middle East swastika to represent...
No, it's Hindu, from Hinduism.
Yeah, a Jainist symbol about right. Life, birth, death, and rebirth in a cycle. And they used it in Western context in a Heideggerian ideal of human biodiversity. And now it's vilified by all liberals. And yet the swastika has a deep meaning about this Asian philosophy. And that one point in time, Europe was going to be Aryan, super healthy, far-right people of the future. And that, now that's gone, and people are trying to resurrect that scene. And so what neo-folk does is it borrows the totalitarian images of the Totenkopf or the Black Sun, which were esoteric reminiscence of the post-war era of Savitri Devi. Now, if you think about it, a lot of what I call post-neo-folk, which you could say is Starkian, or my own Asian Aryanism, is being pretty much a mix of everything that happened in the past 80 years of everything, whether that is the hippie movement, which the Unpop stuff uncovers, or Brandon Adamson's Logan's Run alt-left ideal, and Matt's ideal of neon nationalism, which is aesthetic. This is all intersectional, and in that it says that the new esoteric god is a materialism, because again, going fast forward, we're seeing that a lot of...
Well, the thing about materialism is, obviously, I mean, pretty much even normies know this. We live in this mass consumerist society, but aesthetics are basically what shape... They pretty much shape everything. They shape how we live. They shape consumerism. They shape nationalism, culture, religion. So pretty much everything is aesthetically driven. And anyone who wants to succeed at creating any kind of a political movement or subculture needs to be aesthetically driven.
We need bands and artists and cartoonists and writers of fiction that are going to use this crass post-neo-folkism, where we'll have bands that are kind of like Nitzareb, but joke and refer to that, you know, again.
So by post neo-folk, are you talking about something like Juju?
Exactly. Juju has done this perfectly by adding the shock art or the transgressive art of the 90s and 80s. And as we said before, it's like an Asian neo-folk. They get Douglas Pierce's ideal of the Totenkopf and Black Sun, but use the zoo crosses or talks about how Twin Peaks has something to do with our culture. And talks about how, you know, things about self-hatred and suicide. And it's just all this kind of hipsterism. And Juju's like, again, the proto-Asian Aryan band. And the reason why I add so much Asian themes among post-neo-folk is because it isn't European. It isn't white. It isn't this obsession of Eurocentrism. It adds, again, the swastika's interest of East Asian culture about Shintoism or classic Hinduism, and puts it in a Western perspective, which has to be lost. And now, again, transgressive art is being unapologetically a white national socialist Nazi type. But again,
I think apocalypse culture is the original figures were Adam Parfrey, Boyd Rice, Jim Goad, Richard Wollstonecraft. But now that the alt-right is collapsing, basically a sort of new apocalypse culture of a younger generation is what's replacing the alt-right now that it's imploding. You talk about, use the term the alt-left or left wing of the alt-right. So there's Brandon Adamson's altleft.com. And you say the left wing of the alt-right is a more laid-back, realist and... cool left wing that isn't paused or pretentious. And then there's also the kind of concept of an alt center and Matthew P's blog, alt of center, and basically what I'm doing with my site. So basically there's these different labels, but it's like a new political scene, which puts a much stronger emphasis on aesthetics. And Brandon often blogs about his criticisms of the alt-right. And Brandon, this totally relates to what you're talking about, because Brandon talks a lot of... He praises a lot of the older commercialism of the 70s and 80s. He's really fascinated with the 1980s commercials and kind of a lot of avant-garde art from that era.
Exactly, because all of this is intersectional. All of this is to the same conclusion. And I've said this before, it could be Asian Aryanism, alt-left, alt-center, metamodernism, deaf indie, unpop. The point is that all of this is intersectional, And it can only be summed up as a post-neo-folk or some kind of continuation of the unpop art movement proposed in 2008. And you can use the Starkian all you want, but that just refers to Robert Stark doing things. And a lot of this has to be collective because it isn't just 1488 Nazi stuff that none of these Nazis are making fine art again. And as I was saying, you know, what is art in post-neo-folk? You know, what is the art? What are you going to show? Imagine if I'm having a band and I have a snare drum, some bells, and I'm wearing a goofy costume like I did in a previous act. And what do I show? Do I show symbols of corporations or do I show the art of Ron English or Frank Kozik? I think Ron English's art is a perfect example of this kind of fast food fascism, or Frank Kozik, who loved cereal boxes, you know, like Captain Crunch, and that made up the whole vinyl toy movement of collecting vinyl toys. He made the ideal of this crass children's toy you put on display as fine art. It's a lot of way. This is a lot like pop art again. It's like the Andy Warhol pop art or Roy Lichtenstein aesthetics in today's mixed with transgressive art and of the wisdom of, you know, the alt-right.
As far as avant-garde art goes, you've talked a lot about Trevor Brown. There's another artist who's in the kind of surrealist lowbrow pop art called Mark Ryden. I've seen his stuff before, but me and Matthew P. were at this upscale mall in Calabasas and went to the Barnes & Nobles there, and we found this coffee table book by Mark Ryden, and he's very similar to Trevor Brown. I think he's more famous, but he definitely plays on that kind of a hebephiliac theme that Trevor Brown does. And, I mean, that's one of the most, that kind of a Barnes & Noble and that kind of environment's a very kind of conformist, normie environment. But then you go there and you find this really transgressive art. But, Trevor Brown's obviously someone you're a big fan of, and Mark Ryden's a little bit more mainstream. But there's a theme of surrealism. And then, Mark Ryden, he does play on Nazi imagery. And then there's a whole kind of a hebephiliac theme, that's controversial in its own right. So, yeah, so that's sort of a good example of transgressive art. Are you a fan of Mark Ryden?
The thing behind Ryden and Brown is I'm a firm believer of Pizzagate. Pizzagate is not about telling the Democrats that it has nothing to do with Democrats or Republicans. The Pizzagate ideal is that there is an avant-garde scene that Ryden is a part of. It's not like they're in a cabal together, but it certainly means that transgressive art has reduced to a state of promoting pedophilia. Recently, last month, we had a TED Talk speaker in, I think, Germany, talking about how pedophilia is just a sexuality. It isn't molestation. What is the meaning to all this? It's because they realize people like Samuel Delaney, you know, he reads Peter Sotos. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Samuel Delaney, a black professor from Temple University, science fiction guy, he's all for the pedo stuff. And then you start to realize pedophilia is the next step in transgressive art. And the elites know this, and that's what Pizzagate is all about. And so
I understand what you're saying. You're not talking about pizza, because the idea that there's some sex trafficking ring out of some major pizza parlor, I mean, that's insane. But yeah, I get what you're saying. You're not taking it in a literal sense like Alex Jones would.
Well, the ideal, even if there was a cabal, I still believe the cabal is existing, and there are pretty shifty people among the cosmic pizza that have dealt with art that deals with child abuse themes in the art, which is a part of the interest of apocalypse culture and transgressive art. I'm not going to lie there. But it's just something that's been happening in the post-apocalypse culture, fine art, transgressive thing. That's the next step. Especially, Trevor Brown's theme of little Asian girls. You know, they look like men. Colin Liddell once told me that people who like Asian women are actually homosexuals themselves, that they like this ideal of a little boy or something like that. And again, Pizzagate is not just a conspiracy, but an entire movement and a concern about transgressive art liking the pedophilia nature. Now, again, it's whether you consider that transgressive. However, you have to understand that all this is, again, relative to something of an ultimate cultural decadence about what shocks people, right? So you notice this, too, with Sean Partridge's work, or at least that he'll have an interest with, I guess, Mego toys or some kind of weird dolls that are like for little kids. Oh, it was a Candy and Andy. That's right. They're like plastic children in these weird children of books, and they're about weird dark themes of a molester coming to get you. Or the ideal of Boards of Canada's Gio Gatti and Music Has the Right to Children is about predators, you know, the horrible nature of growing up. Child abuse is a main theme among the liberal elites, and they hate the white middle class because dumb white chads promote this against their own children. And
You did on this whole topic of pedophilia, you referenced that film Short Eyes, which it's a fairly obscure independent film from the 70s, and it takes place in a jail in New York City. And it's actually a great film, but there is this kind of anti-white narrative to it. I think the director was Puerto Rican, so the main character is this kind of he's like a middle class white guy. He's kind of a nice, kind of nerdy, introverted guy, and he goes to jail in New York City on sexual offense charges, and most of the criminals in there obviously are blacks and Puerto Ricans. So obviously it's that angle is kind of not. I think there definitely is kind of this sort of anti-white angle, because the reality is like blacks and Puerto Ricans commit most of the violent sexual offenses in New York City. But just putting aside that angle, it is a really fascinating film.
I briefly seen the film, but again, a lot of media and a lot of the lexicon is made up of weird media from.
But why did you choose to specifically reference that? Because it's relatively obscure.
Well, it's obscure, and it's about prison culture or pedophilia. It's just again, it's funny. It's like this weird ideal of controversial icons like Richard Speck. You know, Richard Speck was this killer who killed, what, 8 nurses out of nowhere, you know, and the media made this ideal that it's just out of nowhere, this bizarre nature of the ideal. This goes with the umpop thing, that if you have Ian Brady and Charles Mason and Adolf Hitler and you make them look cute or twee, you know, family-friendly imagery of pop culture, but against things that are unpopular, you get this weird transgressive nature of a past, which is kind of, you know.
So you're just talking about using these really controversial figures from history like Hitler and Manson as these kind of nihilistic wrecking balls to tear down the values of like normie society.
Well, that was used by such groups like the Weather Underground and some far left circles, but again, the unpop and apocalypse culture, there was some interest in that. But I think now the transgressive artist, where we're talking about Damien Hirst, it's more like a reflection, you know, of these things. You make Charles Manson look happy with wearing Mickey Mouse ears, or you start to compare this juxtaposition. That's what neo-post-neo-folk art is all about. It's about juxtaposing things with popular culture to make them feel that, you know, everything's good, that everything's great. And if you say that, you know, again, Richard Speck peering on the front cover of Avant-Garde Arts magazine, and it's like, wait, this is a magazine about avant-garde art, it's not about serial killers. And then you start to question this kind of as Peter Sotos has deeply written about, this overwhelmingly media attention against things that the media and normies make up, and then the media itself is promoting child pedophilia with their fascination of how children die, of how Adam Walsh is taken by Otis and beaten, like, burnt and burned. It's just like horror films.
Well, Peter Sotos has kind of made that critique of mainstream media, how mainstream media presents itself as moralistic, but they definitely promote that and they profit off that. So, I mean, I actually have a lot of respect for Sotos. I think he is sort of exposing the fraud of, like, the mainstream media. But as far as this whole theme of being transgressive, I view things in stages. So, like, the first cultural stage is just to use, like, this shock art and transgressiveness as a sort of nihilistic wrecking ball to kind of destroy the values of normie society. I guess what we have now is a kind of – it's like a secular slave morality. But then in the long term, that's just not like a healthy permanent – that's just not really a healthy state. We have to kind of go beyond that and create like this positive utopian vision. And this positive utopian vision can definitely borrow on a lot of these transgressive artists, whether they're Trevor Brown or Lasse Nielsen or – Even Fashwave, just like take a lot of forms of transgressive art, like take Trevor Brown, take Lasse Nielsen, take Fashwave, and just pick and choose like the best aspects and then create your utopian society. But we're not really at the point yet. We're at the point where basically we had the alt-right had some. The alt-right had a lot of positive aspects, but they failed because they were a reactionary movement. So we're at the stage now is just be transgressive, just disrespect the normie values of society, and then our long-term goal should be to create some kind of a positive utopian vision.
I'm an anti-nihilist. I don't advocate any form of nihilism because it's not because –
neither am I.
Like,
I'm just talking about – no, I'm not saying I'm not really a nihilist, but I'm saying using transgressive art as a – not accepting nihilism as a permanent state, but using this kind of sense of nihilism as just to kind of mock the values of and delegitimize basically the values of society as it is.
Well, again, I'm very fearing about mocking and satirical stuff. That is a sincere – or that is a white people interest. I don't know why white people like to do that. When I'm sincere, I'm actually sincere.
So then what are you trying – see, what you're trying to get on is you genuinely do want to create a positive vision.
I do want to create a positive vision, but I would like to have a Volkswagen Beagle with the face of, you know, Chuck E. Cheese on it, or do, you know, live long and prosper against any Roy Rogers, worship Huckleberry Hound as the incarnate of Vishnu, say that mellow yellow is runes, and then worship, you know, paganism will be the worship of mellow yellow. And it's not that I'm saying, look how ironic it is, or look how Snog's vision of this, you know, consumerism. This is exactly what happens in the far right, is that when people read into this far right theory coming out of Countercurrents or unfortunately TRS, they become legit Nazis. And so if you make a cult based around the interest of fast food products with Hinduism, esoteric paganism, you will create an ideal future where we can embrace capitalism or products as the new form of fascism. Totalitarianism, it may be scary against boomer normies, but you know what's going to offend millennials? The love for McDonald's. The God-given love that Mellow Yellow is a good drink. The ideal that the Cal Arts Institution is going to be the art movement that will create everything. That Star versus the Forces of Evil or Gravity Falls or Steven Universe or they're the cartoons that will define our future reality. And that is the, you could say is a type of Asian-Aryanism, but it's more than that, because I think post-Neofolk...
But Star versus the force of the forces of evil, you did mention there are some interesting cultural themes to it, I think, as far as like the gender dynamics go. But from an aesthetic standpoint, I don't think the animation is really top-notch. Like, it doesn't compare to more avant-garde animation like you would find in that Kaze Tokino Uta. It's very...
Patsalio.
It's... Right, exactly.
Well, it's because the CalArts movement is what everyone's criticizing of. Everyone's now aware that shows like Thundercats Roar, and that's the new movement that rules over us, and everything's being rebooted in a CalArts style. Yet, we should just... Again, if it's offending everyone, what about the sincere autistic people that like it? I think... Star versus the Force of Evil is just basically like an old school propaganda Nazi cartoon, and we should embrace it that way. We should embrace Star versus the Force of Evil as Asian-Aryanism and people who like Juju. That's exactly where I'm getting at with fast food fascism. It's crass
what
commercials.
What are your thoughts on the whole concept of homo nationalism? I talked to Matthew P about that. He wrote an extensive article, but what's your take on it?
Homo nationalism is intersectional with post-neofolk because you're allowed to be, not in a libertarian sense, gay, but gay people create the world, and they create the arts, and they reign supreme with the interest of art. If we could just say Greg Johnson was all in the countercurrent scene just to promote homo nationalism, then we can also take that homo nationalist agenda and put it towards... post-neofolk. I mean, Douglas Pierce is a homo nationalist, and the people who envision this, you know, neon nationalism and aesthetics of future, they can have their homo nationalism with a side of tater tots from Burger King and your Coca-Cola Soma. And this is something that goes back to Alex Goldstein's ideal of Hinduism mixed with hipsterdom. This is what there's the Hindu ideal that you should be grateful for what you have, the Confucius ideal of that all of this is good, you know, and as well that because all of this is good. And post-neofolk, again, there is some transgressive elements of relating the tale of Rama to Star Wars and to saying that the original unapologetic man that beats his wife is Fred Flintstone. It all makes sense in a way, but as well takes the best things about countercurrents, like, you know, white survival and interests and anti-liberalism and ethno-nationalist markets, and put it into the best interest of crass pop-up ads everywhere, because that is ultimately reality. One being a cucked consumer and one being the alpha merchant, over again like Ouroboros. And we have to create a Hare Krishna religion or a post-neofolk juxtaposition of pop art to basically tell about this reality. And then it could supersede the ideal of dumb white nationalists that really think Incredibles 2 is some Nazi Wonderland Leni Riefenstahl film. And we can remind those Nazis that the Incredibles 2 is your consenting doom. It's not a good family. It's a white CGI family. We need to have other things like things that they don't like, and tell them that there is some more better spirituality than actually believing in white ethnostate ideals. Again, post-neofolk is an avant-garde art movement that comes after neofolk. I mean, if there's one thing together through all of this, it's the ideal of anti-liberalism and the creation of new art. And to really create new art, we have to open the mind, right? Timothy Leary says, take LSD and you can open the mind. Well, I'm proposing that we have to take in things we never considered before as the new swastika, as the new Topinkov, as the new Black Sun. We can't just jerk circle and create far-right memes and a new stupid TRS culture saying metapolitics for basement nerds who live out into Kentucky, because that's not going to work. What's going to work is ideological warfare and new art that promotes new ideals that can open people's minds and people who sincerely like these things. And the new transgressive art will be a lot of infighting and a lot of offending other people. Because eventually, because that's what all punk culture is. It's a lot of infighting and queerness. And eventually that is, you know, what post-neo-folk is. It's queer culture.
We should be thinking more in actually putting out, kind of moving beyond the kind of meme culture and putting out a vision of a kind of ideal utopian society that one would want to live in. And as I said, that utopian society can borrow on these different artists, whether it's Juju, Lossie Nielsen, Trevor Brown, retrofuturism, just all this different stuff. But you have to kind of use art and culture to create a vision for a kind of society people want to live in. And I mean, I don't. You were saying that you're not using fast food symbolism in an ironic sense, but I think we have to move on by just having this kind of online meme culture and creating this kind of vision that's going to attract people. And that's basically the philosophy of a neon nationalism. And that's also the philosophy. Actually, Brandon Adamson, in the term neon nationalism, to describe Roger Blackstone, and in my book Journey to Vapor Island, it's a very transgressive book, but it's also a utopian book because you have this figure, Roger Blackstone, and he has this politics based on aesthetics. So there's this very visual aesthetic of architecture and retrofuturism and the kind of society he wants to live in. And then there's this girl that a gnome is obsessed with, Natalie Bloom, who kind of represents his vision of like this ideal girl. So you use culture, whether it's literature, artwork, films, and it can be transgressive, but you kind of want to steer people in the direction and getting them to think of the kind of society that you want to live in. And you've sort of done that with a lot of your work.
I think ultimately the artist rules supreme. It's the Nietzschean ideal that the artist gets the last say, whether that's through writing, through music, and through physical art. And yes, academics can do something and change higher education and get over, but it's ultimately the artist who proposes new ideals, and metapolitics is on the side. What you said, Stark, is what metapolitics through this ideal society, and that's political. The artist is kind of goofy with politics. Colin Wilson said, as a writer, what does he know about politics? He'll just criticize the Holocaust, and then he's a Holocaust denier, and then he writes something about Lovecraft mythos. And I believe that ultimately, in this society that we're living in, there's only a consumer and a merchant that constantly, like Euroboros, is exploited, makes money off of it. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And as this market is also decaying, we have Donald Trump, God Emperor Donald Trump, that wants to create ethnostates and anti-liberalism. And as this SJW dies, we need something new to worship of the past. So things are going to become more esoteric, like a religion. What was once atheist and kind of rational from the areas of Wilhelm Wundt, who believed that psychology, biology mixed with philosophy, is going to become that through materialism. We're going to look at Super Mario as an ideal manosphere figure. We're going to look at Star from Star versus the Fear versus of Evil as the ideal white girl. We're going to look at the fictional as characters from Hindu mythology, or characters from the New Testament or the Old Testament. And that is going to mix up in this kind of, not confusion, but we're going to rewrite history in a way where paganism will be crass consumerism. And I do believe there is a cosmic god from CBS that looks on down upon us. And we have to respect the consumerism that we have. We could be rebellious, and some people want to believe in white nationalism and neo-Nazism and whatever, I'm not a socialist. I think people are, again, motivated by artistic and religious person. And this is almost religious art, and we have to accept people. And a new church of euthanasia that isn't normie-hating, but embracing something that is new art that offends intellects, too. It's all about infighting, and we'll have a new infighting religion, kind of like Islam, but it'll be very artistic in itself. I mean,
yeah, but it can't just be crass. You have to create a vision that reaches a sort of higher level. So it doesn't have to be traditional or reactionary. Of course, it can be transgressive. It can be futuristic, but it has to sort of appeal to a sort of higher level in a sort of cultural aristocratic sense.
Yeah, and the aristocratic ideal is Asian-Aryanism or some type of ideal where the artist reigns supreme and only the certain intellect gets it. You know, I think Tim Biskup is he's a fine artist and he deserves pretty much all worship from me. I mean, that's pretty much what I think. You know, it's really just things should be now recategorized. You know, things are objects and things are esoteric, and the new occultism is through everything that we see today, in which we try to ignore as bad. And we end up realizing that new transgressive is the things we don't understand has greater meanings.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Francis Nally for being on. Check out his website, pilleater.com.
Yep, and I'm on youtube.com/pilleater, and I do music at chomcharity.bandcamp.